you are the biggest exporter to the United States and you import a lot from the United States. Businessmen travel back and forth between the two countries. On the political arena, there's official relations that are good. I think the official relations between the two countries right now is quite good until Obama did this thing with the tariffs the other day. That's what this man was writing about on page 3. Why did this happen? You know, it looks like it happened for domestic reasons in the United States, not because of China. And China is like the poor victim of this. And as I say, there are certain issues that will always crop up. The issue of military spending is a delicate issue because the military in both countries always has to prepare for the worst. And the militaries get money from their governments by saying, well, this country has these ships, and we don't have these ships, so we better have these ships so we can match them. It's a kind of game, and that's why I was urging that there be better military cooperation between China and the United States so that the two countries would at least trust each other more. I think the military on the Chinese side and the military on the United States side don't really quite trust what the other one is up to. You know, they see military spending on certain new equipment, and they just wonder what's happening. The Chinese say, well, we're not aggressive at all. You're much more powerful than us, and don't worry about us. But they still do. And then this issue on human rights will continue to come up until that's dealt with in a better way. I'm talking about people who write blogs or something who get arrested and put away for a while. That strikes Americans as not good, but that's a sensitive issue. And then I think the Chinese press will write articles about what Americans do that aren't so good either. So anyway, as I say, I think the relationship overall is potentially very good, if not perfect, anyway. But, you know, yeah, go ahead.
I go first. We know that I believe that the American media are not independent of government.
You don't think so?
Yeah, in one night, you know, the so-called military analysts that appear on TV, like Fox News, they take benefit from the government, from the Pentagon. They receive they can help the commercial companies to get military contracts from the government. And if they do not say something good about the government, they will not get the chance to say, of visiting foreign countries with the official, So I believe that to some degree that the government is in strict control of the media.
Well, I think you're referring to during the Iraq War, when the Iraq War started in particular, everybody, all the media were looking for, quote, military experts to comment on the fighting. And in fact, I, on the Council of Foreign Relations site, interviewed some military experts, of course. Now, it turned out later, now, of course, these military analysts, sometimes they were in such demand and they spoke so well that the television companies signed contracts with them so that they could have exclusive rights to having their commentary. And later on, but then it became, I think what you're talking to is some of these commentators also had contracts with defense companies. And you're suggesting that these commentators then would not say anything negative about the Pentagon for fear that their company might lose a contract. That could be, I don't know. I see. Well, no, it's an interesting, some of these commentators were quite interesting that they were quite critical of the Pentagon. It wasn't like everything they said was praising. And, you know, the war wasn't going that well anyway, so you couldn't say everything's terrific. It just was, they were trying to give their, and they were trying to act as if they were an analyst still working at the Pentagon. But the reality is they did not have specific information. I think what the Pentagon tried to do was to give these analysts briefings so that at least when they were giving their analysis, they knew some facts of what they were talking about. You know, it's easy to give an analysis when you don't have much information. Well, it could be. You know, it could be. I'm not denying that. There's all kinds of different business dealings, and the defense industries are very sensitive to trying to get their military contracts. Whether that makes the press independent or not, you know, that, I still say that the U.S. press is independent. I've mentioned a few episodes where people have asked you not to write a story or that sort of thing, but it's... and, of course, the reality is, if you look into it, the White House knows how to manipulate the press. In other words, right now in the United States, for example, the prime concern of President Obama is to get this health plan approved. We talked about that yesterday. And he has been giving, since he came back from vacation at the end of August, he spoke to the Joint Houses of Congress. He's given interviews on television. He's trying to go, he speaks to different groups. He's trying to use his own popularity to get, overcome the reluctance of some members of Congress to approve this health plan. Now, only yesterday was there a specific health plan offered by the Senate. And it doesn't have everything in that health plan that people in the House of Representatives want. So there's a continuous debate, and I think a lot of Americans are still very confused about just what it is the president wants to get approved. So it's making it, you know, when the president's not clear on what he wants, it makes it difficult to get it approved. So it's not a great time for Obama right now, and I was surprised he made this policy statement on the missiles yesterday, because that's only going to confuse the political dialogue in the United States. It'll be interesting. I'll be interested to get back to New York on Monday to see what's going on. Yes, go ahead.
Would you please give some comments of the editing of this newspaper?
I think the English is quite good. I suspect they have a few. When I was over at that business magazine yesterday, in the middle of their newsroom, there was this blonde American typing away, and I introduced myself, and he was a former journalist from the United States who now works for them, improving the English. So on their English language website. So I thought it's edited very well. Now, I don't know who does it. Are these all Chinese who work there, or do they have any imported foreigners? I wonder. It's quite good. I think, you certainly couldn't get, it'd be very hard to publish a similar newspaper in Chinese in New York. There are Chinese newspapers in New York for Chinese Americans who read it in Chinese, and there's Korean newspapers, and there are, I assume there's a Vietnamese. There are all kinds of foreign language newspapers in New York because we have so many immigrants in New York. Okay, come on, some questions on your side. Some more questions, anyway. Yes.
Please feel free to ask questions.
Mr. Gretchen, I'd like to know something about
about yourself, your story.
Okay.
I'd like to know that how did you go from newspaper news editing to online news editing?
Okay, that's a good question. Did I tell you some of that yesterday? You know, I've been speaking to a lot of student groups in Shenyang and Shanghai and here. All right. The story is, and I have to attribute this to my oldest son. Okay. My oldest son is one of these children. When he was a little boy, like 6, 5 years old, I could tell he was not your usual little boy, because I remember taking him to a movie theater to see a movie, a children's movie, The Red Balloon. I don't know if you've ever seen, it's a French movie called The Red Balloon. It's a very pretty movie about a boy running around the streets with a balloon. And my son had absolutely no interest in the movie, but instead started crawling along the aisle of the theater looking at the little lights, light bulbs in the aisle to give, you know, light to people to walk on, and was curious how that worked. And then he wanted to go up and see the movie projector. He always wanted to know how things work. And of course, as soon as the first computer I ever saw in the United States, a home type computer, was a tiny little computer made by a company called Sinclair, which was a British company. It had about 32 KB of memory, nothing. And you plugged that box into a TV set, and that's how you got a screen. And there was no built-in hard drive or anything. You had to have a disk drive. You used an old disk drive. You put in a disk. And make a long story short, my son became a little genius on computers at about the age of 10. And in fact, he went to a summer school course at American University. And the professor thought he was so good, he asked him to be his assistant the next year, even though he himself was a student, to help out other students. And so he went to Harvard College and majored in computer sciences. And I was working at the newspaper. And of course, because of him, we always had computers in the house. The first computer I ever bought, a real computer, was an Apple IIe. The Apple company were the first computers in the United States. And I got a 300 baud modem, you know, with very slow speed, and sent that stories to the newspaper. They had a computer to receive it. And anyway, to make a long story short, 1993, I went up to visit my son at Harvard. He was also a student there. And he said, "Dad, let me show you my computer workshop." He was majoring in computer sciences. And he had this big computer, a big, heavy computer. And he said, "Let me show you something." He showed me my first World Wide Web. It was on a Netscape browser. Netscape company had just started. And it was a Library of Congress in Washington had an exhibit. And so on their website were pictures of, there were pictures and there was text. So I said to my son, I said, "James, if you could have pictures and text on a screen, why not a newspaper?" And he said, "Dad, it's not possible. There's not enough bandwidth, not enough memory, can't work." And so I said, "Okay," I get home. And lo and behold, by 1995, that's just 2 years later, first newspapers are beginning on the web. The British London Telegraph, San Jose Mercury News. So my editor, my chief editor came to me and said, "All right, this is 1995, end of 90. He says, "You've been foreign editor now for 6 years. You've done a great job. You're a wonderful man. But we want to replace you with somebody else, and what would you like to do next?" And he knew my wife is half French. He said, "You want to go to Paris and be bureau chief?" I said, "No, because my mother was in a nursing home. My mother was suffering from a severe illness, and I couldn't leave her behind." And I said, "No, I'd rather work in New York." And then I suggested to him after a while, I said, "You know, some newspapers are beginning to put their news on the computers through something called the internet." My chief editor had no idea what I'm talking about, you know. And yes, and so we had no, at that time, in the newsroom at the New York Times, we had computers, but they just were to type word processing. You know, it was not, and so I showed him eventually, and he seemed rather interested, and I convinced him that we had to be in that for competitive reasons. So I was assigned, along with a small group of other New York Times people, to develop our first website. We had a businessman. We had two people from the editorial department. We had some techie people. And we hired an outside designer to design the website. And lo and behold, we launched in 1996. And we were one of the first of the big American newspapers to have their own website. Our first website was very small. It was very, the American term is clunky. I don't know if you know clunky. That means not smooth. It was, our technology was very primitive. We had a, I had one senior person from the newsroom who was interested in the web also. And then everybody else I hired was like your age. It was a great opportunity for young people because they knew something about the internet from their school. And so we all learned together. And it's interesting. One of the young ladies I hired right out of Duke University, who was recommended to me, I hired her as an intern back in 1998. She's now the chief editor. She stayed with it and is now the chief editor of the website. And many women on the website, some men too, but that's how I did it. And so as a result, I've always been interested in technology and new media and foreign affairs. So I'm kind of a mixture of all these things. And I like very much working as a team. What I love about journalism, and I'll now make a confession here, what I love about journalism is the satisfaction one gets from a team effort. That is, you can't put out a newspaper by yourself. Now, people can write their own blogs. I'm not talking about blogs. I'm talking about something like this. Because, look, this requires at least maybe 40 reporters, maybe another 20 editors, printers, truck drivers. It has a website, so it needs techies on the website. And then I'm always amazed when it comes out, you know, that it comes out well. And I'll tell you my sense of fascination. In 1996, soon after we launched our website, we had our offices two blocks away from the New York Times building. And the New York Times building in those days had a printing press in the basement. And so newspapers would be printed in the New York Times building, and they would come out on a special chute, and these big trucks would pull up and take the papers on. And, you know, I'd walk by on my way home late at night seeing this happening, and I'd say to myself, how can this exist like this? We're putting out all the news that's in these printed newspapers with our small staff of 20 people. At that time, we only had 20 people. And the Times is spending millions of dollars each day to publish this printed newspaper. How can we coexist? And now, of course, the problem is a little different. The website now is much more sophisticated. They have 100 people working there. And they now work in the same building as the newspaper. They coordinate coverage with the newspaper. The editors from both the website and the print newspaper coordinate from 9 o'clock in the morning the coverage for the whole day, and they have people from the, in other words, if something happens in China, when all the Chinese, you know, early in the morning, the Herald Tribune will send the story from Hong Kong, because everybody in New York's asleep at that time, you know, and so they utilize the London Bureau when stories from Europe to come into New York. It's a, and as I say, if you've ever worked on a newspaper, you must love the team effort. If you don't like the team effort, get out of journalism, because it's not a place for a prima donna. You can't be by yourself, okay? Yes, another question, all right. All right. What should Chinese media such as Xinhua News Agency do before they become a real international agency? Well, Xinhua is a real agency, and they report. And, you know, if you want to know what the Chinese government is saying, Xinhua is a good source, because, you know, it comes out from Xinhua. It's speaking for the Chinese government.